哦，这样子给过你。那么今天我们什么了？那么你有什么啥了？这是不是准备？那么有人在这是说什么？好了，这个是我们这个。
May the Buddha visit this world. And may his teaching shine forth like the rays of the sun. May the followers of the teaching of the Buddha live like brothers and sisters. May the teaching of the Buddha flourish for a long time to come. Probably this was a prayer by Losawa Rinchen Sangho. So whether it is the lineage holders of the teaching during the first advancement of Dharma or the teachers of the teachers holding the lineage of the later advancement of Dharma, sometimes there may be certain disagreements and conflicts. And it is because of this that prayer was made, saying that all the followers of the teaching live harmoniously like brothers and sisters. And this, as is prayed that time, and even these days we make such prayers, we recite such prayers, and as we pray in terms of our practice also, it is true to say that we are the follower of the same teacher, Buddha Shakyamuni, whether you belong to Nyingma tradition or Khyentse Kyedru or such a tradition. And within all of these four schools, they have sub-schools. So depending upon the lineage, there may be slight differences in terms of transmission, initiation, and point of emphasis. But it's extremely important that we should all live harmoniously. And if this is there, then everybody will be benefited. And meanwhile, in Tibet also, generally speaking, it seems there is harmony. And those of, in the case of those of us who are in exile, generally speaking, there is good harmony and good unity. And so, just as we pray, accordingly we need to make an effort, and when we make the effort, then we can see the fruit, and the kind of harmony that we have achieved right now is a result of our prayer. And in general, in terms of the teaching, teachings include not only Buddhist teachings, but there are many types of non-Buddhist teachings. And also in terms of teacher, there are different teachers. So in the case of the follower of the, even in the case of the followers of the Buddha, there are different Buddhist philosophies. And among these different Buddhist philosophies, there are a lot of disagreements, different viewpoints. And for example, if you read the text by Asanga, you find strong criticism against some of the Madhyamika viewpoints, saying that they are nihilist. So in this way, even among the Buddhist philosophies, there are varied differences. And as I had earlier pointed out, even in the case of this tradition of the mind training, Lama Selingpa, this philosophy of the mind only school of thought, and also you can read that in the Shiksha Samuchya or Compendium of All Trainings. In the sutra called Stainless or Timameva Travatendo, where it says that the view of the transient psychophysical aggregate is the source for achieving enlightenment. So, and this quotation from the sutra was cited to prove that even in the case of an ordinary person, such a view can be developed. So even in the case of those who had genuinely developed a very profound and genuine altruistic wish to achieve enlightenment, even in the case of those people, they may have misconceptions about certain views of reality. And because of such differences of view, if we emphasize on the differences and try to create more disharmony, then that is absolutely wrong. And so there should be a healthy attitude to bring about harmony despite differences in terms of philosophy. And this should be true not only in terms of this philosophy called schools, but also in terms of all other religious traditions. And this is important because among the human population we have so many different types of different mental dispositions and different interests, and these different philosophies therefore may be suitable to different people with different mental inclinations. And the main message that is being given by all these different religious traditions is to be kind-hearted, to have self-discipline, to have contentment, and to help others. And this is the main message of all the religious traditions. And they, likewise, they all encourage the need to develop faith, devotion, and so on, and similarly compassion and love. And of course, with regard to the reason why you should develop these qualities, there may be some philosophical differences. Likewise, for in the case of development of faith and devotion, with regard to the process of developing it, there may be different philosophical viewpoints. But the main message is the same, that is to develop close feeling towards others, and to be kind to others, and to be warm-hearted to others. So such kind of faith, devotion, and brotherhood is necessary. Now, for example, in Buddhism, we talk about all phenomena like the inherent existence, and that they are all interconnected, and it is based on such a realization and understanding of interconnectedness. We are encouraged to develop loving kindness, compassion, and so on. And then there are other philosophical schools who say that things exist inherently, and it is because of such an inherent existence of the cause and the effect, there will be infallible relation between the cause and the effect. And so in this way, development of such qualities are encouraged, and primarily in the case of our Western friends, you all have your religious traditions of your forefathers, and all these religious traditions have their unique message. So generally speaking, I would say that there is no need to change religion. And as I had highlighted earlier, the change religion sometimes creates complications. For example, in the case of those who embrace a religion which speaks about a creator God, and even in the case of such philosophy, they do not talk about past and future lives, but this very life is created by a creator God, and that makes you develop some feeling of closeness toward the creator who has created this very life. And it is in this way you are able to develop close feeling towards the creator who has created your present life. And the more you are able to develop such a close feeling towards the creator, you will develop a wish to fulfill his wishes. And his wish is to have everybody, to make everybody happy and satisfied, and to have all his creation in harmony. So in this way, the thought and purpose of the creator is the origin of happiness. In this way, such spirit can be instilled. For example, in Buddhism, the more you have faith and appreciation and interest towards your Lama, that will help you fulfill his wishes and his instructions. So similar to the case.
Yeah,
So those people who have such inclination for these people, the concept of creator is very powerful. And as is found in the Bible, they speak about eight deadly sins, which includes arrogance, pride, competitiveness, craving, lust. These are identified as seven deadly sins, and in Buddhism we identify these in the category of afflictive emotions, and these are the motivating factors for accumulating negative actions and negative karmas, and therefore they are called deadly sins, or we can call them as heavy negative deeds. So such presentations are there, and therefore all these teachings are necessary and they are beneficial to all of us. And during the past hundreds and thousands of years, all these major religious traditions of the world have benefited millions of people, and they will continue to benefit people in the world in the future. And therefore, as we pray that may the teachings abide for a long time, and may all the flowers, followers of the teaching live harmoniously. So when we recite such a prayer, not only we should think about harmony among the Buddhist teachers and the followers, but with wholehearted mind we should develop respect and veneration to the followers of other teachers, other teachings. And for example, Buddhist point of view, and particularly in the case of the ancient Indian philosophical schools of thought, many of these non-Buddhist schools of thought, they have been a source of inspiration and have been very useful. And similarly, religions belonging to Eastern or the Western world, they should all be appreciated and respected, and that is extremely important. So therefore, it is extremely important that all of us live harmoniously, and the purpose of all of us, the followers of all the religious traditions of the world, is to bring about long-lasting peace and happiness in this small world, and that should be our common task. And in this way, one should sincerely and wholeheartedly practice one's own religion, study them, and having studied one's own religion, try to practice it and adopt it. And here at this point, we are studying Buddhist text. And in the case of those of us who have appreciation and interest in the teaching of the Buddha, in our case, it is important to practice the teaching sincerely so that it will be useful for this life and for many lives to come. And for that purpose, it is important to know the teaching, and particularly should read a teaching or a text which shows the complete teaching of the Buddha, stage by stage or in a systematic order, and the contents with unmistaken contents. And if you read such a text which shows the complete teaching of the Buddha, then you will be able to gain a comprehensive idea about the teaching. And it is for that purpose this time we are reading the Bodhicharya Avatara and the mind turning like the rays of the sun. So we start from the Bodhicharya Avatara to start with. We finished the second chapter yesterday, which is confessing the negative deeds. Out of the seven limbs of practice, we completed the topic related to paying homage, making offerings, and then confession. Next is the practice of rejoicing. the first four states, that the virtues which gives rest to the sufferings of sentient beings in bad migration, and likewise actualization of peace by suffering sentient beings. When you see all this, you should rejoice at them with strong sense of joy. So this means that if sentient beings are not experiencing suffering of suffering, and if temporarily if they have achieved a kind of rest, in the sense that if they have accumulated some positive merit to actualize higher state of life and liberation, and similarly those certain beings who possess suffering but for the time being liberated from negative state of existence, and if they have achieved the life of a human being or a god, and abiding in that state of peace, and when you see that, then you should rejoice at them. That is, rejoice in the causes and the fruits of such virtuous deeds. In short, in our own case, the virtuous deeds, we are rejoicing at the virtuous deeds that one has earned to actualize good human life and life of a god. And not only you should rejoice at the virtuous deeds that you have done, but you should also rejoice at the virtuous deeds done by others, instead of becoming jealous or being competitive, and similarly rejoice at the steps that they have actualized. And likewise, you should rejoice at the accumulation of virtuous deeds that becomes a cause for achieving enlightenment. Now here, enlightenment refers to the state of liberation. If you see the accumulation of virtuous deeds that becomes a cause for actualizing liberation, then you should rejoice at them. Accumulating merit here, or virtuous deed here, refers to observing moral discipline, developing contemplation and wisdom. And based on those causes, when the embodied beings or the sentient beings, when they get liberated from the sufferings of cycle of existence, and when they actualize the state of arhathood and actualized the definitive goodness, we should also rejoice at them. So just as you have rejoiced at the definite good, definite higher status, similarly you should rejoice at the definite goodness. And similarly you should also rejoice at the level of the bodhisattvas and this state of enlightenment of the protector, that means the state of Buddhahood. Verse number 4. And likewise, you should rejoice at the oceans of virtuous deeds of mental development that brings about well-beings of all sentient beings, and likewise the deed that benefits all sentient beings, there also you should rejoice. So in this verse, you rejoice at both the good virtuous deeds that has been developed mentally, and similarly the actual deeds that has been performed to benefit other sentient beings. Verse 5 is requesting the Buddhas to turn the wheel of doctrine, or to give the teaching to the Buddhas of all directions. With folded hands, I would like to make this request. Kindly lead the light of Dharma to for the benefit of sentient beings who are confused in the darkness of ignorance. So here you are requesting those Buddhas who, after achieving enlightenment, if are not giving teaching or turning the wheel of the doctrine, you are requesting them wholeheartedly to give the teaching. What you are saying here is that sentient beings are helpless, they are despondent, and they are completely confused with regard to what is to be adopted and what is to be given up, and therefore they do not have the light of knowledge. Their mind is completely obscured by darkness and thus completely lost and confused. Therefore, kindly lead the light of the Dharma and show the unmistakable path, spiritual path. Verse 6 is requesting them not to pass away. And with folded hands, I would like to request to the Buddhas who are considering to pass away, please do not leave this sentient being in this state of blindness, and you should stay for countless eons. So what is being said in this verse is, if these enlightened Buddhas pass away, then the sentient beings would definitely become blind, because then they have no teacher that would show them what is to be adopted and what is to be discarded or given up. And therefore, for the sake of sentient beings, kindly stay for countless eons, turning the wheel of the doctrine, giving the teaching. Next, verse 7 is the branch of dedication. And with regard to the practice of dedication, dedication can be done with some material substances and also without material substances. And having performed all this, that means having performed earlier all the preceding branches like paying homage, offering and so forth, and all the virtues that I have accumulated through such practices, by this may all the sufferings, like the suffering, suffering of change and conditioned suffering, may all this be removed. May all this become non-existent. And particularly, so long as there will be sick people, till that long, and till the sickness recovered, till that long, may I become a medicine, or a doctor, or physician, and a nurse for these sick people. And likewise, may I be able to bring down a shower of food and drinks, and remove the thirst and hunger, and particularly during the time intermediate eon of famine, may I become food and drink for these suffering sentient beings. Intermediate eon of the time of famine refers to a period of famine when people have nothing to eat, and it is said they depend on eating the bones and so on. Verse number 10, in the case of those sentient beings who are deprived, who have nothing and who are poor, may I become an endless treasure for their benefit, and may I be able to present myself before these poor people in the form of many types of material wealth, material enjoyments. Verse number 11, I will offer and give up without sense of loss my body, my wealth, and the virtues that I've earned in the three times to fulfill the benefit of all sentient beings. Now, in the case of your body and wealth, you are considering about the present body and the present wealth, because your past body and wealth has already gone and disappeared, and the future body and wealth is yet to come. So, even though this is a kind of rough idea, but still, if you go to very subtle detail, then it's difficult to pinpoint the present. Apart from the past and future, it's difficult to pinpoint a present. So, what you are actually offering here is your present body and all the wealth and positions that you have. Now, in the case of virtues, you can offer the virtue, fruit of the virtues that you have earned during the three times. So you can dedicate the virtues that you have earned in the past, which you have present, and which you will accumulate in the future. The purpose of offering such a thing to sentient beings is explained in verse number 12. It is by offering and giving up everything that you will transcend suffering. And this is important because mentally you are aspiring to actualize such a state of transcendence of suffering, such a state of liberation. So the first line is saying that one must give up all these things. One must offer all these things to others, because it is through this way that you can transcend suffering or you can achieve liberation. And in fact, in terms of your attitude, you are trying to practice and actualize such a state of transcendence. And then the third line says that since sooner or later you have to give all this up, that means at the time of death, you have to give up your body, your enjoyment and so on. So this being the case, it is best that you offer this to the needy people, to the suffering sentient beings. So right at this time, at the time when you die, then without your choice, you will have to give your body and wealth. So before that time comes, right now, when you have the opportunity, when you have the power, it is best that you offer this to sentient beings. Verse 13, and I have indeed offered myself, I have offered my body to all sentient beings so that they can enjoy it in the way they want to enjoy. So this being the case, even if they are going to kill me or defame me or beat me or whatever they want to do, let them do it, because I have given this to others, I have offered it to others. And similarly, because I have wholeheartedly offered my body to others, so even if others make a play of my body, or if they want to, if they simply ridicule or make a jest of me, since I have already offered my to them, there is no need that I should hold it as dear to myself. And what is the use of holding it as something dear to me? Because I have already offered it to them, so let them use my body in the way they want to use. And now, according to Shantideva Siksha Samuchya, there is these four practices of protecting and guarding your body, then giving it to them, and enhancing them, and developing and multiplying them. And so this is what is probably said in this verse number 15, where Shantideva is saying that even if you have offered your body in that way, but this does not mean to say that you should let them use your body for meaningless purposes or in a way that would harm them. So therefore, the verse 15 reads that let them do all those actions in relation to my body which will not harm them. By focusing towards me, may they never become meaningless. That means whenever they contact or relate to you, may they always derive some benefit and happiness from me. And by focusing towards me, if some people develops So from here, you are dedicating the result of mind training to the benefit of others. So verse 16 reads that focusing towards yourself, if somebody becomes angry towards you and develops faith towards you, even though in many of the root texts, this line reads, by focusing towards you, whether sentient beings become angry or develop faith. But when I was explained, when Kunilamba Dumbuchi explained this verse to me, then he cited some Sanskrit sources, and then he said that it is not faith, but it is lack of faith. So by focusing towards oneself, if they get angry or develop lack of faith or disliking, even that should become a cause for fulfilling all of their purposes. So in this case, you are making a kind of unhealthy contact, because focusing towards yourself, they are developing anger and disliking or lack of faith. So you are praying that even in that case of making a bad contact, even that should become meaningful for them. Verse 17, if someone says something bad things to you, verbally or physically, if they harm or beat you, or likewise if they insult you, or, now here it primarily means saying something indirectly to you, may all these people be able to partake enlightenment with me. Verse 18, I am the protector of those without protection, and the guide to those that have entered the path, and a ship on their boat to those that want to cross the ocean, and likewise a ship or a bridge or a boat for those that want to cross different kinds of sea or ocean. So if you are crossing a small if you are crossing a big sea or ocean, then like a boat or a ship or a boat, and similarly those that they are looking for an island, may I become an island for them to take rest. And those they are living in darkness and confused, may I become a lamp in the light. And those that are looking for a place to stay or a bed to sleep, may I become a place and bed for them. And in the case of those that need an attendant or a slave, may I become a slave to all of them. And similarly, may I become a wish fulfilling jewel and a precious vase or precious pot and a mantra that fulfills all the wishes and the great medicine which is extract of all the essence. And similarly, the wish fulfilling celestial tree, so that I become a source of fulfillment of wish of all the sentient beings. So in short, you are praying that may I become the one which the sentient beings are looking and may also become a source of nourishment, life in many aspects, in the form of great elements like the earth, the space, so that they can be used by all sentient beings. Just as in the case of great elements like earth, space and soul, they are not possessed by one individual, they are the commonwealth of everybody. So likewise, may I become the source of life and nourishment of all these different sentient beings, similar like these elements. This is exactly what has been similar to what has been said in the precious garland by Nagarjuna. And likewise, may I also become a cause of the sustenance and life of all sentient beings who are as infinite as the end of the space. And until all these sentient beings achieve enlightenment, until they transcend the suffering, may I become a cause for their life and for their sustenance. And you are making a prayer saying that may I continue to abide until all these sentient beings transcend suffering and become a source of their life. So what you are here trying to do is trying to lessen the self-cherishing attitude, and you dedicate yourself and you aspire that you become a source of enjoyment of all sentient beings until all these sentient beings achieve enlightenment and until to the end of this space. In this way you instill courage, and these are very powerful reflections. So these are the preliminary practices of the seven limb practice for development of bodhicitta, and then next is generation of bodhicitta, aspirational bodhicitta, and also development of bodhisattva vow. Just as in the past the Buddhas have generated bodhicitta and practiced the bodhisattva way of life gradually, similarly, in order to benefit other sentient beings, I will develop bodhicitta, and likewise, stage by stage, practice the precepts and the ways of life of a bodhisattva. So the first verse, verse 23. The first two lines of the verse 23 refers to development of aspirational bodhicitta. And similarly, I will develop the bodhicitta in the mind of others, so that will be holding the aspirational bodhicitta. And if you read it in a different way, saying that just as in the past, Buddhas have gradually practiced the ways of life of a bodhisattva, similarly, I, in order to benefit others, will gradually practice the precepts of the bodhicitta, and then that is adopting the engaging bodhisattva way of life. So by reciting this with reference to these lines and these verses, you can either develop just aspirational bodhicitta, or you can develop both the aspirational bodhicitta and engaging bodhicitta. Thank you. So in this way you should hold the aspirational bodhicitta and engaging bodhicitta. And next is rejoicing, developing rejoicing in the end. So first the verse 35 deals about developing such joy within your mind. In this way an intelligent person retains or holds such pure bodhicitta, and also in order to further develop it in the end, one must embrace the spirit of one's mind in this way. And as he said in this verse, such a process of development of aspirational bodhicitta and engaging bodhicitta is definitely the work of an intelligent person. So therefore, with great appreciation and clarity of the mind, one should hold such a bodhicitta. And then in the end, in order to further develop such a bodhicitta, you should raise the spirit of your mind in this way, meaning as is explained in the subsequent verses. Today my life is fruitful, and I have very well obtained this human life. I am today born in the lineage of the Buddha, and I am now the child of a Buddha. Your life is fruitful because you have obtained this human life and met the teaching of the Buddha, and through that way you got this opportunity to practice and develop bodhicitta. And not only you encountered such a teaching, but today you have developed the two kinds of bodhicitta, and it is in this way you become a son or lineage of the Buddha, and you are a child of the Buddha. And therefore, since now I belong to the lineage of the Buddha, the lineage of the Bodhisattvas, and therefore, verse 27 reads, therefore, whatever may become, I will only perform those actions which is in harmony with the lineage of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, and I will never defile this faultless lineage. And what are the activities of a bodhisattva that is in harmony with the lineage? The activities of bodhisattvas are the development of and practice of the six perfections and leading a way of life that benefits everybody. So therefore such a way of a bodhisattva is without defilement, without fault. And such an altruistic wish to achieve enlightenment for the sake of all sentient beings is faultless because it is great in the beginning, in the middle, and in the end. And this is also a disciplined lineage, because you never harm others, and not only you refrain from harming others, but you also help other sentient beings. So therefore this is a faultless disciplined lineage, and therefore I will never defile such a lineage. So you are making a commitment saying that this wonderful mind that I've developed, I will never defile them, I will never contaminate them. So this is a kind of commitment that you make. And then in verse 28, again you develop strong sense of joy, just as a blind person finds precious jewel from a heap of rubbish. So now here the example is that first of all you are blind, And then secondly, you are able to find this precious jewel from a heap of rubbish. Similarly, due to whatever be the reason, just like that blind person, today we are a kind of embodiment of afflictive emotions, and from beginningless times we are influenced by the three poisonous minds, and externally and internally we are soaked with the power of afflictive emotions, and with regard to these afflictive emotions we are very much habituated with this from beginningless time. And also in terms of conditions and factors for development of such afflictive emotions, the conditions are in abundance everywhere. And however, today I got this wonderful opportunity to hear about such a teaching of Bodhicitta, and in this way I am able to develop such a beneficial mind. So it is almost like a coincidence. And therefore you are saying that somehow or out of coincidence that I am able to develop this bodhicitta. So if you are able to appreciate the importance of this mind, it is really unbelievable that you have such an opportunity. And what are the great advantages? These are explained in the subsequent verses. And this development of bodhicitta is the supreme nectar that destroys the lot of death of all sentient beings. And temporarily also, this is like an endless treasure that dispels the poverty of sentient beings. So as I said earlier, that even temporarily speaking, when you develop such an altruistic mind, you naturally become relaxed and you develop strong confidence, and because of that there will be no untimely death, so you will be able to lead a long life with peace and happiness. So in this way, you are protected from the death and from deprivations and poverties. And through the practice of bodhicitta, you offer your body, your wealth, and your virtuous deeds. And it's in this way that this is like an endless treasure that dispels the poverty of all sentient beings. And in the case of oneself also, if you are totally dedicated towards helping other sentient beings, your mind will be always be instilled with peace, happiness and satisfaction. And therefore, from the day you develop such a mind, then the poverty of your mind is being removed. And in that case, you will be able to benefit other sentient beings, and you will be able to continue to benefit other sentient beings until you achieve enlightenment. And this is the supreme medicine that can eliminate the strongest kind of illness of sentient beings. That means the sickness here refers to attachment, anger, jealousy and so on. And it is because of these internal afflictive emotions that our physical body and elements also get disturbed and we become physically sick. So this is like a medicine that dispels all this. And this is like a celestial tree under which you can take rest, under which you can allow the sentient beings who have been tired because of wandering so much in the cycle of existence, that they can take rest under such a celestial tree. Once you develop such a bodhicitta, you are totally committed to benefit other sentient beings, whether you are enlightened or not, whether you have removed your afflictive emotions or not. So when you have such a determination, then naturally this will give you a rest. And you have been wandering aimlessly in the cycle of existence for a long time, but once you develop such a mind, you will definitely get a rest. And likewise, in the case of sentient beings, they have also been wandering within the cycle of existence, and they were never able to take a deep breath of peace and happiness. And for these sentient beings also, it is this altruistic mind that will give them satisfaction and rest. And particularly in the case of all those sentient beings who have now fallen into the negative state of existence, it is this practice of bodhicitta which is really like a universal bridge or a kind of palanquin that will carry them and that will lift them and that will liberate them from such a negative state of existence. And once you develop such a bodhicitta, it's really like the rising of the moon that dispels the darkness. So this development of bodhicitta is really the moon of the mind that dispels the scorching heat of afflicted emotions. And this is like a great sun that will eradicate and that will thoroughly remove the dimness of ignorance of sentient beings. So such kind of dimness of ignorance or lack of knowledge is found even among bodhisattvas who have reached higher bodhisattva levels. So it is this bodhicitta which will totally eradicate such a dimness of ignorance that is found in the mind of sentient beings. And it is from this point, this is like a great sun. So in this way, temporarily this world mind will help you get liberated from suffering of suffering and actualize higher rebirth. And similarly, it will help get liberated from suffering of change and conditioned suffering, ensuring the actualization of higher status and definite goodness. Since these are all due to bodhicitta, therefore, such a sublime teaching that speaks about actualizing higher status, liberation, enlightenment. So this practice of bodhicitta is really like the essence, the refined kind of spirit, refined essence, just like a butter that you would get after churning the milk. So similarly, the essence of teachings, of all the sublime teachings that teaches about achieving higher state of human life, that teaches about achieving liberation, that teaches about actualizing enlightenment, the essence or extract of all these teachings is the development of bodhicitta. And those sentient beings who are travelers in the path of cycle of existence and who wishes to enjoy the wealth of peace, you offer the practice of bodhicitta to satisfy these great travelers, the sentient beings, and let them abide in the supreme peace and happiness. So this is how you develop the joys by yourself. And then in the last concluding verse, the last concluding verse is a verse that helps to develop the joys in the mind of other sentient beings. Today, before the protector of all beings, I have invited all these sentient beings as my guest, and therefore the gods and the non-gods, they should be pleased. And what you are saying is, before the Buddha and bodhisattvas as a witness, I'm seeing the self-cherishing attitude and the self-grasping as my sworn enemy, And contrarily, I will regard the practice of cherishing the well-being of other sentient beings and removal of self-grasping. And through such a practice, I will give life and breath to the suffering sentient beings, those who are not liberated from samsara. I will help them liberate it. Those who have not achieved liberation, I will help them achieve liberation. And those who have not achieved enlightenment, I will help them achieve enlightenment. So since it is in this connection that I have invited the sentient beings as the guests to peace and happiness, and therefore the gods and the non-gods and the arahats, all of you should be pleased. So this completes the third chapter. Chapter, having generated such a mind and received the bodhisattva vow, then you must engage in the practice of a bodhisattva way of life, because you have already made a commitment to lead such a way of life. Now, in order to undertake such practices and to lead the ways of life of bodhisattva, you should receive the vows, and because you have received the vows and made the commitment, and therefore it is important that in your daily life you should remember those precepts, because you have made such a commitment voluntarily and not being forced by others, and therefore with conscientiousness. So one of the most important factor is that you should be conscientious, or you should always be careful and remember the commitments and precepts. So this chapter is on conscientiousness. A child of Buddha, that means a bodhisattva, having developed such a stable mind without getting distracted, do not transcend the precepts and make effort towards it. And if it is an action which you have started without much analysis and examination, or if you have started a walk in a rushed way, and when you have not undertaken careful examination, then in that case, even if you have made a commitment, still you should reconsider and think whether you should really do that job or you should give that up. So in the case of ordinary job, this should be the case. But here when we are talking about development of bodhicitta and made a commitment to practice the precepts, then in that case, in the case of the bodhicitta and the benefits of bodhisattva's way of life, this is something that has been thoroughly examined by the Buddhas and bodhisattvas by their great wisdom, and for countless eons they have seen these as the most important and most amazing cause for actualizing enlightenment. And in your case also, you have examined the importance of this mind repeatedly, again and again, and you have seen that such a practice will be useful for one's own purpose and purpose of other sentient beings. So this being the case, it is not good to withdraw from it or to procrastinate such an action. Because having made such a commitment, if you practically do not practice them, then you have deceived all sentient beings. Then in that case, what kind of rebirth and what kind of life I will have? I will definitely be born in the negative state of existence. Because when you made such a commitment, you had invited all sentient beings as the guest of honor, and you made a commitment to help them achieve enlightenment. So therefore, if you do not practice them, then you are deceiving them. Now, this is so because even in the case of a very small, ordinary material object, if first of all you mentally decide to give it to somebody else, and then later on if you do not give it, if you withdraw from giving it, then it is said that the result of that will be that the person will be born as a hungry ghost. Now, if this is the case, then what need is there to talk about inviting all sentient beings as a guest of honor wholeheartedly and saying that you will help them achieve the unsurpassing supreme enlightenment, because here you are deceiving all sentient beings. So in that case, what kind of rebirth you will have? What kind of life you will be born in the future? Meaning that you, how could you then be born in a happy state of existence? You can not be born into such a happy state of existence. Because you have deceived all sentient beings, therefore in the future it will not be possible to actualize a happy life. Because there is nothing that can be more, there is no negative action that can be more severe or more serious than deceiving all sentient beings. And the next verse is clarifying how certain quotations are free from contradictions. Because in the past history, there are stories where it is said that a particular individual had given up the bodhicitta and still later on got liberated. So if someone here asks the question by saying that if there is such a serious negative result for deceiving other sentient beings, then what about those accounts which says that such and such person has given the bodhicitta and still got liberated? So this is answered by saying that yes, there are certain exceptional cases because the subtle functions of karma are inexplainable and unthinkable, and this can only be known by the omniscient Buddhas. So giving up bodhicitta is the heaviest one of all the downfalls of a bodhisattva. And as said, you give up bodhicitta, then you lose all the bodhisattva vows, and therefore this is the heaviest downfall of the of all the vows of the bodhisattvas. Even in the case if you have not received the bodhisattva vow, if you simply still if you give up such a mind, then your capacity to help other sentient beings will become very weak. Because if you withdraw yourself from such a mind, then you are interrupting or obstructing the accumulating of many types of merit that is of benefit to other sentient beings, and in this way you are lessening your capacity and power to help other sentient beings, and as a result there will be infinite negative state of existence, negative lives. Now, even if you destroy the peace of just one sentient being or just one individual, now for example, if someone is developing a very kind heart to somebody, and then if you discourage that person saying that this is improper and you shouldn't be so kind to such and such person, and in this way if you destroy the peace and happiness of one sentient being, then what need is there to talk about destroying the peace and happiness of all sentient beings whose numbers are as infinite as the end of the space?
Mm-hmm.
내도 못 알아들어요. 예약이 내년 터졌어. 근데 찍을 때 와야 식물 떡이 있냐. 남과 머리를 차려야 돼. 이제 대식물 식물. 스탠드 찍이 와야 야와 식물이야.
So this verse number 10 is actually kind of explaining the reason for the meaning that has been explained in verse number
9.
When you develop a very powerful bodhicitta, and then directly and indirectly, if you create forces and conditions to lose such a bodhicitta, then directly and indirectly you are harming the fulfillment of purposes of many sentient beings, and it is in this way you are destroying their peace and happiness. So therefore, if sometimes you develop very powerful downfalls, and sometimes you develop very powerful bodhicitta, and if you intermix these two practices, and then it will take a long time for you to actualize the bodhisattva bhumis, bodhisattva or spiritual grounds. And so therefore it is important that right from the beginning you do not commit any of these downfalls. And Tsongkhapa highlighted this point in his Lamrim Chemo or Great Stages of the Path very clearly by saying that if somebody breaks his or her leg, it can be treated, but there will be a difference between one who has never break his leg or one who treated his leg. Therefore, just as I have committed and promised with great veneration and respect, I will apply them, I will practice them. And this means that just as in the presence of Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, in order to help Mother Sentient Beings achieve enlightenment, I made the commitment to practice the six perfections and to help sentient beings achieve enlightenment. So similarly, with great veneration and respect, I will practice as I have promised. So right from now, or right from at this time when we have obtained this precious human life and found the Buddha Dharma, if I do not study and practice properly and do not make the right effort, then I will go from lower level to lower level. I will go down and down, and it will be difficult to go up. So if at this time, if I do not be careful and practice accordingly, I will fall more into a negative state of existence. And once you fall into one of these negative state of existence, then as he said in verse number 13, for example, even though countless Buddhas have come and gone, whose whole wish is to benefit all sentient beings, but because of my own fault, I did not become an object of receiving their benefit, receiving their help. For example, in the past, countless Buddhas have come, but because of one's own lack of merit, and because of devoid of because of not being able to undertake the development of bodhicitta, even though countless Buddhas have visited and come, but because of my own fault, I'm unable to make such progress. And the same thing is said in the ornament of realization, Abhisama Alankara, that even if the king of the court brings down the rain, if the seed is rotten or improper, you cannot expect crops or sprouts to grow from that. And likewise, there are many supporting quotations from the Guru Yoga practice and so on. And even though countless Buddhas and Bodhisattvas have come, but because of our own fault, because of our own negative attitudes, they could not help us. And even in the parlance of this particular era of the Buddha, right from the Buddha until now, countless teachers have come, and great liberators have come, and great teachers have come, but still, what is your situation? Because of your weak determination, you are unable to make much progress, and therefore we were unable to reach a secure and stable spiritual level. So similarly, if in the future I continue to remain so, and then repeatedly you will get the same condition, the same state, and you will fall into negative state of existence, where you will be afflicted by sickness, bondage, and your limbs will be amputated, and your body will be split and destroyed. And therefore it is important to be kind to oneself and to be attentive, and if you do not remain attentive and make effort, you will fall into a negative state of existence. So these last two lines can either be explained as saying that you can either interpret these two lines by saying that if you continue to live in this way and continue to commit negative deeds, that then you will born into negative state of existence, where you will suffer from sickness, bondage, amputation, destruction, and so on. And then the Kunalamba Rinpoche said, it will probably better to explain these two lines by saying that as a result of your performing negative actions, you will experience negative state of existence, you will suffer from sickness, bondage, and so on. And in general, the coming of the Buddha is very rare, and it's also very rare from one's own side to have developed faith and to obtain such a precious human life and to be able to get habituated with such virtuous practices. And it's not so easy to encounter such facilitating factors. So, except at this time, it is not so easy to obtain such an opportunity in the future. Now, right now, your body will be like a sunshine without sickness, and you may have all the foods and other facilities at your disposal, and you are free from any harm. Now, for example, in our case right now, we may not be suffering from any major sickness, and you also have good facilities. And in fact, one great master has said that when your stomach is full and when you are basking in the warmth of the sun, then you really look like a good practitioner. But as soon as you encounter some misfortune, then you reveal your true nature. So right now, as he said in this verse, that right now your health is like a sun. You may be free from sickness and you have food and other facilities. But however, remember that your life is momentary and it is deceiving. And this body that you have right now is like a borrowed garment, and the owner who has, it is like an object on loan or a borrowed garment. So very soon the owner will take it back. So likewise, you will die and you will lose your body. So what we can do is that we should try to use this short duration of the life in the most profitable and constructive way. So therefore it is wrong to think that I'm healthy and I have all the facilities and therefore there's no need for me to do undertake any spiritual practice. If you think in that way, that is absolutely wrong. Because strictly speaking, you really don't have much control over your life. Since your mind is not hidden to yourself, so you are the best witness to yourself. Even though right now we are born in a place where there is a Buddhist practice, there is a religious practice, but if you look carefully, the practice that you are doing, the practice that you are doing is almost like a superficial practice, and you are undertaking all this practice in a very ceremonial way as a habit, and then later on you gain some knowledge, not very thorough knowledge, but when you gain some knowledge, then instead of gaining conviction towards what you've studied, you might start developing some negative doubts towards the authenticity of the teaching. And therefore, with this way of life, verse number 17, therefore with this way of life, I will not obtain even a human life, and if I do not obtain human life, I will be committing only negative deeds, and I will commit no virtuous deeds. Now look at the animals, like cats, dogs, and so on. They have jealousy, they have attachment, they have anger, they have self-cherishing attitude, and they also know how to deceive others. Now in terms of virtuous deeds, can they come to the temple and do a prostration? Can they meditate on loving kindness and compassion? This is very clear. We can all see this. So if you do not obtain such a human life, what you will do is only negative deeds. Verse 18. At this time, when we have the capacity to be able to employ virtuous deeds, to partake virtuous deeds, even at that time, if you do not make an effort and perform those virtuous deeds by yourself, so what these two lines is saying is that unless you make a personal initiative to perform these virtuous deeds simply by obtaining the human life, you will not engage in the virtuous deeds automatically. And without performing such positive deeds intentionally or with some effort, and if you fall into a negative state of existence where you will be totally confused by sufferings, at that time what will I do? Verse 19. So what to talk about not being able to perform virtuous deeds when we are born as a negative being? Even when we are born with a human life, if we do not perform virtuous deeds, and not only you have not performed virtuous deeds, but if we have accumulated non-virtuous deeds, and therefore for countless eons, you will not even be able to hear the word of happy existence or happy migration. Therefore, the Buddha has said that the life, it is extremely difficult to find this human life. By performing a negative deed, even for a moment, for example, if you say, "Oh, these horrible monks," or something like that, even by saying such a negative word or performing such a negative deed, even for a moment, it is said that one will have to abide in a hell without respite for eons. And if this is the case, then there is no need to talk about the
the state of not being able to achieve a happy state of existence due to the countless negative deeds that we have performed from beginningless times. And in the next verse it says that not only we have accumulated much negative deeds in the past, and still we are continuing to accumulate such negative deeds. Therefore, while experiencing those negative deeds, we will not get liberated, because while experiencing the fruit of such negative deeds that you have committed in the past, you are developing many more other negative deeds. So therefore, in this way, there will be this cycle of rebirth. So not only you have, not only you are experiencing the result of the negative deeds that you have committed in the past, but still, because of afflictive emotions, you are continuously committing negative deeds. Now take the example of the animals, or some of which whose example I have already given. And even in the case of those beings who are experiencing the pains of being born in the hell, even the sentient beings keep on developing negative deeds like hatred and so on. So therefore, it's really almost like seems impossible to get liberated from such a negative state of existence and to be born in a happy state of existence. And this being the case, that today, having found such a life with leisure, if I do not make my mind habituated with the virtuous deeds, there is nothing more deceiving than this, and there will be nothing more stupid and ignorant than this. And having realized this, still out of confession, if I remain lazy, then at the time of death, I will experience great suffering and great pain. Because at the time of the death, you will be full of regret, remembering how you have wasted your life, and then there will be fear. There will be definitely these two types of problems. There is on the one hand, you have great regret of what you have not done, and then the fear of being born into negative state of existence. And if you are born into such a negative state of existence, for example, if you then are born into hell, and then after death, if you are born into hell or a negative state of existence, then you will experience intolerable sufferings for a long time, and through that way your body will be burnt with the fire of the hell, and the fire of unending regret will be there, and your mind will be totally tormented by sufferings. And therefore, having achieved such a level where you can bring much benefit, and while possessing such knowledge, still if you allow yourself being led into the hell realm, then you are really like a person whose mind has been duped by the spell of magic recitation. Or is it the case that I do not have the mind at all? So in this way we go empty-handed. That in this way you make your life meaningless. And why is it that you make such a life meaningless? And this is all due to ignorance. In the case of the fundamental nature of the mind, it is clear light. It is not with faults. And also this natural urge to have happiness, to remove suffering, nothing is wrong with that. And therefore the main source of sufferings and problems, the main source that brings about destruction within oneself and that destroys other sentient beings, is ignorance. And ignorance here refers to a state of mind, a confused state of mind, which is there right from an ordinary state until to the state when you have achieved enlightenment, until you become an arahat, until you achieve the pure bodhisattva level, you are destroyed and you are harmed by afflictive emotions. And even after achieving high bodhisattva levels, like the three last pure levels, even at that time, because of you have not removed the imprints of ignorance, the fault is not because there is a mind, the fault is not because there is a body, the fault is not there because there is an eye, the fault is in the afflictive emotions. And this is explained in the next verse, which says that hatred, attachment, and so on, these enemies, even though they do not have legs and hands, and even though they are not hero or braves, but see how they have enslaved us. Since hatred is extremely destructive, therefore Shantideva first cites hatred, and then likewise craving, and then likewise ignorance, wrong view, and within the view there are view of the psychophysical aggregate, or wrong view, or view of negative conducts and disciplines as positive conducts and disciplines. So in this way there are 10 kind of afflictive emotions. So one should know these different afflictive emotions, like the six root afflictive emotions, and then 20 secondary afflictive emotions or secondary afflictive emotions. Since these are the source of destruction, it is important to know their nature, their entity, their causes, their factors, and what are their counterforces, what are their antidotes. One should try to know all these details to be able to fight and eliminate these afflictive emotions. The word hatred. Hatred refers to a mind which develops disliking to others from the depth of one's heart, and you distance yourself from something that you dislike, and develop kind of strong disliking and wishing to harm that object or that certain being. That is called hatred. And when we talk about craving or attachment, then that mind sees the object as something attractive and close to oneself, and aspires that one should never be separated from such an object, and develops a kind of strong, close feeling, and you do not like to be separated from that object or that sentient being. And similarly, in the case of the view of transitory collection, the view of in the case of the view of transitory collection, you tend to see oneself as permanent, solid, independent, and you then tend to see yourself as something superior to others, and the mind gets puffed up. So this is called kind of arrogance. And when you become arrogant, externally also you become puffed up, and that's why people who are arrogant, they tend to kind of gaze upwards. And in the case of doubt, it is a two-pointed mind. And generally speaking, doubt is necessary, some kind of skeptical attitude necessary, particularly in the terms of developing discriminated awareness, developing the wisdom. It is important to develop kind of a doubt. But here we are primarily talking about the afflictive doubts. Afflictive doubt here refers to those kind of doubts which sees what is true as not true and what is not true as true. And then in the case of ignorance, of course, different Buddhist philosophies have different interpretations, and there are those who say ignorance is just lack of knowledge and not misconception of reality, and there are other philosophies which say that ignorance is not just lack of knowledge but misconception of reality. So there are such different philosophies. But here, of course, we are following the Madhyamika system. So ignorance is not just lack of knowledge, but misconception of reality. And particularly, generally, there are so many different types of ignorances, even in the form of misconception of reality. But here, we are primarily talking of ignorance as is presented in the 12 members of dependent origination. And so ignorance is really not just the lack of knowledge, but misconception of reality, which is opposite to the wisdom that correctly realizes the emptiness or ultimate reality. The way of things is such that they are devoid of independent and inherent existence, but because of misconception of reality, the mind of ignorance sees everything as having inherent and independent existence. The view grasping the transient body and mind it refers to the wrong view which tends to see I as the Lord and the body and the mind as a kind of it is subject, and that view tends to see the I and the body and the mind enjoyed by the I as totally independent, totally separate, just like a king or a leader and his subjects. So therefore, one tends to get the wrong notion that there is an independently existent psychophysical aggregate. And it is because of this, normally to our unenlightened, informed mind, whatever object appears to us, we tend to see them as having independent and inherent existence. And therefore, there's two types of graspings, the grasping of I and the grasping of the mind, and likewise the grasping of the person and the grasping of the phenomena. So here I'm talking primarily about this view of transit recollection, and then there is the wrong view, grasping the extremes. There is the extreme of permanence and the extreme of nihilism. Then we have the wrong view. In general, there are two types of wrong views. Wrong view in terms of exaggeration and wrong view in terms of denigration. Now, the wrong view in terms of exaggeration refers to the fact that in general things are devoid of inherent existence, but you tend to see them as having inherent or independent existence. Then there is the grasping of permanence. And the view of denigration or nihilism refers to those views which tends to see the past and future lives as non-existent, even though there is such past and future lives which are existent. And then there is also the grasping which is called seeing the wrong modes of conduct and discipline as fine disciplines and fine conducts. Believing that such wrong disciplines and wrong ways of conduct are responsible for achieving liberation. And generally speaking, those afflictive emotions which are not based on a philosophy or on a view, I think they are slightly better. For example, in the case of hatred, as an antidote to that, we meditate on loving and attachment, we meditate ugliness of the object and so on. Now, in the case of the emotions which are based on philosophical reflections or views, they can also be called the corrupted views. So the view here refers to those, the wrong view here refers to those that is developed not in harmony with the way things exist. So all these afflictive views are characterized by five features, which are you have kind of forbearance to that wrong view, and you have aspiration towards that, you aspire for that, and that wrong, because it is a discriminative, it is a corrupted wisdom, therefore even though it is wrong, but it makes some analysis of the object, and so you don't accept something as, because it is simply attractive, but you do some analysis, investigation, and make wrong conclusion, and therefore it also possesses a kind of intelligence, and therefore we call it corrupted wisdom or contaminated wisdom. And then there is craving towards the object, and therefore there is conception, and there is investigation. So these corrupted wisdom, which are afflictive views, they all possess these five, all of these five afflictive views possess these five features. And therefore, as an antidote to these afflictive views, we need to develop a wisdom that realizes emptiness. So it should be an antidote that correctly perceives the object. Whereas in the case of compassion, they don't have a particular object. So in the case of development of other qualities like loving kindness, compassion, and so on, they can be the temporary measure to suppress the manifestation, direct manifestation of these afflictive emotions, but they cannot be a counterforce that would eradicate these afflictive emotions. And one which eradicates the afflictive emotions are the view that gains insight into the ultimate reality. So that's why in Buddhism, a kind of four types of antidotes have been explained. So there is one kind of counterforce and antidote which reduces the extent of that afflictive emotion and suppresses them, and there is another which eradicates them. And then with regard to this six root afflictive emotions, and likewise the presentation of the ignorance, as I said, there will be differences in terms of presentation depending upon different philosophies, and therefore because these different Buddhist philosophies make different presentation about the meaning of ignorance, so therefore there is also difference in the terms of presentation of the fundamental view of all objects. And in the Parsangika Madhyamika school, it explains that all phenomena are devoid of inherent existence. But according to the Samatantrika Madhyamika, even though things do not have independent existence, but they have inherent existence.
Mm-hmm.
Because according to the Savatantika Madhyamikas, if things do not have their own characteristics and inherent nature, there is no way we can posit any the existence of any object. But when viewed from the Prasangika Madhyamika, even these views are defiled views. And because of such views, again, we will end up developing certain negative afflictive emotions, and therefore there will be differences in terms of presentation of the actions and the origin of actions, and likewise the path that leads to the cessation of such actions and the very meaning of cessation. So these are very detailed areas of study. So what is being said in this verse is that these afflictive emotions like hatred, craving, and all these enemies of afflictive emotions, even they do not have legs and hands, and even though they do not brave and do not possess huge physical bodies, and also they, either they are brave or they possess special physical dexterity, because it is a mind, they do not have all these physical features, and particularly they belong to the mental factors. And not only they are mental factors, and these mental factors arise by depending on many other improper thoughts, and therefore if you reflect carefully, even from that point of view, they are not really brave or they are not really clever. However, these afflictive emotions have enslaved us from beginningless time, and made us walk in the way they wanted.